Hello and welcome to The Summer Rise. I'm Roshan Mohammed Saleh. 10 years ago, over 8,000 Zionist settlers were forcibly evacuated from the Gaza Strip by the Israeli authorities as part of Tel Aviv's so-called unilateral withdrawal. But the period since that time has been a catastrophe for many Palestinians. Gaza's 1.8 million residents have endured a civil war between Palestinian factions and several wars with Israel that have killed more than 4,000 Gazans and have destroyed tens of thousands of homes. What's more, a blockade imposed by Israel and Egypt means residents can't import many basic construction materials to rebuild. According to the World Bank, Gaza now has the world's worst performing economy, with the world's highest unemployment rate at 43%. On today's show, we'll be discussing the plight of Gaza 10 years on from Tel Aviv's so-called withdrawal. But first, here's Ashraf Shannon with a report from the besieged territory.
The Palestinians in Gaza continue to suffer under an inhumane Israeli blockade for nearly a decade. Israel has also waged three devastating wars on the Gaza Strip since 2008, killing and injuring thousands of innocent civilians. Entire neighborhoods were bombarded during the one-ton Israeli attacks in the recent war alone, including hundreds of factories and commercial buildings, leaving tens of thousands of families without proper shelter and many people without work. Israeli violations against the people of Gaza have caused hopelessness and despair, especially among the youth, who say that their hopes for a better future have faded.
This is a miserable situation. There's no work or anything. I'm fed up with this life and I've lost all hope. If I had a chance, I'd emigrate because it's becoming unbearable here.
The youth are depressed about the economic situation and they can't find work. You find them sitting around the public parks doing nothing. I am a tailor and I hardly find any work to feed my family.
Israel withdrew its forces from Gaza in September of 2005, but keeps a de facto occupation of the territory by imposing a tight land, air and sea blockade that has crippled Gaza's economy. Thousands of people graduate from college every year and end up jobless due to the harsh economic situation in the Gaza Strip.
Our hopes are on hold because we don't see any progress taking place. We can't achieve our aspirations under these harsh conditions. All our plans end up at a dead end, leading to nothing.
The mood among Gazans is of hopelessness and despair. After years of Israeli blockade, they say the suffering has been ignored amid what they describe as an international conspiracy of silence. Ashraf Shannon, The Sun Will Rise, Gaza.
To discuss and debate the plight of Gaza, we have two guests in the studio with us today. Mahmoud Abdu is a Palestinian author and academic from Gaza who specializes in international relations, international law, and American studies. And Sharif Nashashibi is a widely published journalist and Middle East analyst of Palestinian descent. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. Mahmoud, if I could start with you. So you're from Gaza. What are your friends and relatives telling you, kind of 10 years on, from Israel's so-called withdrawal? What's the situation there like?
The situation right now is actually very unfortunate and very hopeless. As you said, as we heard in the report, everyone is thinking about basically migrating to Europe or migrating to any other country but to live in Gaza. People are willing to actually take the risk of dying as they smuggle themselves through Sinai Peninsula or through the Mediterranean into Europe. As opposed to just risking it and staying where they are in Gaza. Yeah. They can't think about the future for themselves. Yeah. They can't think about the future for their kids. There's no life. There's absolutely no life, even in terms of human rights standards, in terms of humanitarian standards. The UN itself said in a report before the last war on Gaza that by 2020, Gaza would be uninhabitable. So you can imagine what happened even after the war,
and the youth,
Gaza was sent back to the Stone Ages, basically. Yeah. So there is no water, there is no access to fresh water, there is no access to electricity.
And as we saw in the report, the youth particularly are desperate, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, who blames them? There are like at least 8 generations of students who graduated from universities in Gaza and still have no jobs. Basically, everyone goes into university knowing that they will never get a job at the end of the tunnel.
So highly qualified, but no jobs.
Sharif,
you know, the Israeli media and the world media call it a withdrawal, a unilateral withdrawal. Was it really a withdrawal?
It was only a withdrawal of troops and settlers, but it wasn't an ending of the occupation of Gaza. Israel, since then, has maintained effective control of the Gaza Strip. It controls the airspace, the sea space, and the borders. And that means that under international law, it is still the occupying power, and it has a responsibility for the welfare of the inhabitants.
So we can still call Gaza, I mean, we call the West Bank occupied, don't we?
Gaza is
but
also
we don't refer to Gaza as occupied.
Well, it is under international law, it is occupied because Israel maintains effective control of the territory. So it was simply a withdrawal of troops and settlers.
Why did they withdraw their settlers from the West Bank and their troops? Gaza.
Two main reasons. One is to alleviate what Israel calls the demographic threat by withdrawing from a very tiny piece of the occupied territories that has about half the Palestinian population of the occupied territories. So giving up a tiny bit of land, but also a lot of Palestinians. But also to foster this false narrative that Israel was making a major concession to the Palestinians, which would then allow Israel to consolidate its control over the West Bank, which constitutes a much larger body of territory.
And from a Zionist point of view, the ideological kind of grip over the West Bank areas is much stronger, isn't it, than Gaza? They're not too bothered about Gaza, is that correct?
They're not that bothered, but if you look, and this is why the situation looks so hopeless, is to evacuate several thousand settlers from Gaza caused a major national uproar in Israel. So you can imagine, how can you envision a day where they will uproot hundreds of thousands of settlers in the West Bank?
Are they going to do that?
Well, it makes you very hopeless.
Yeah. But Mahmoud, as I was trying to kind of intimate earlier on, I mean, Zionists consider the areas of the West Bank as part of their homeland, don't they? Where it's not quite the same for Gaza, is it? Maybe they wish that Egypt would take over Gaza or something.
Right. I mean, and that's actually why they decided to give up Gaza at the end, because if you remember in 2002 there was the roadmap for peace, and that roadmap for peace determined that in 3 years, or planned, suggested that in 3 years there would be a Palestinian state. The Palestinians, of course, accepted it as the last hope for peace after the Camp David negotiations failed and collapsed in 2000. And the Israelis were never really intending to give the Palestinians a state to begin with. That was the platform that Netanyahu ran on in 1996. And again, ever since then, every time he came to office, he came to the office with the promise that he would never allow the creation of a Palestinian state. Okay. So instead of accepting that in 2005 there would be a Palestinian state established within the time limit of the roadmap for peace, the Israelis decided to just withdraw from Gaza. It's a little bit of distraction for the international community, and it's a little bit distraction to the Palestinians themselves, to make them occupied with autonomy issues, as opposed to worrying about whether or not they would have a Palestinian state.
We're going to come back to the discussion in a few minutes, but we're going to move on for the time being. We've been collating the comments you've been sending to us, as well as taking a look at what's been trending on social media over the past week or so relating to Palestine. So here's Camelia Shambayati with a quick roundup.
Now that we've approached 1 year on since the Israeli bombing of the Gaza Strip, Gaza has been on everyone's minds, with people outpouring messages of solidarity on social media. Amanullah from Pakistan says, Gaza is a concentration camp of Israel with full US military and financial aid. Also, Gaith from the US says, Israel is an illegal rogue, settler apartheid, criminal terrorist entity, and it's a source of terrorism. Long live the Palestinian resistance. Resistance is not terrorism, occupation is. Moving on now, let me bring a few videos to your attention. Recently, a boycott, divestment and sanctions movement activist, Mohamed Desai, was kicked out of a Virgin Active gym in South Africa for simply wearing a political BDS t-shirt. The incident sparked outrage over social media platforms, and the Virgin Active South Africa chain has come under attack for quelling freedom of speech. Virgin Active responded to the incident, saying that they had requested that Desai should not wear the t-shirt to the gym, and that he arrived wearing it to generate confrontation, but they have now since issued an apology on their website. Now, this next video shows how skateboards are bringing joy to the lives of Palestinians blighted by occupation. Mayan Hamid's short film Kickflips Over Palestine is a beautifully shot and intimate portrait of a small but growing subculture in Palestine. In little more than 20 minutes, it introduces the viewer to the freedoms and joys which skateboarding can bring to the lives of young people confined by the Israeli occupation. But at the same time, it refuses to romanticize the situation for Palestinian youth, as it also depicts some of the impacts that occupation has. And finally, this short animated video has been released as part of a campaign of the Palestinian Civic Society to prevent the destruction of an Arab-Palestinian Bedouin village in the Negev Desert. The video called Dog Hotel shows that dogs are treated better than Palestinian Bedouins in occupied Palestine, as it contrasts the luxury dogs can enjoy at an animal hotel with the deprivation in the adjacent Bedouin village that is slated for demolition by Israeli authorities. And that's our social media wrap-up for you. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter.
Sharif, if I can come to you. I mean, I think we've all kind of agreed that from the Palestinian point of view, the pullout and what's happened in the last 10 years has been a bit of a disaster. From an Israeli point of view, putting your kind of Israeli cap on for a minute, has it been a success? Has it delivered kind of security for... That was the intention, wasn't it, for the Israelis?
Well, it certainly hasn't provided security. I think it's been quite useful for them from a PR perspective because they've continued to foster this idea of, look, we gave Arabs their land back and they fire rockets at us, so why should we give up any more land? Mm. There's a whole propaganda narrative around this, which they have used from the disengagement. So, and it has also allowed them, with some degree of success, to try and separate the issue of Gaza and the West Bank, as if these are two separate entities with two separate solutions.
Yeah.
Even though under the Oslo Accords, which Israel signed, the Accords recognized Gaza and the West Bank as a single territorial unit.
Yeah.
But now they are trying to detach Gaza from the wider Palestinian cause, which is in an attempt to make it even more complicated to have a unified Palestinian front.
Mm. Let's talk about the blockade. I think we have to get that in. Obviously, we have this extremely tight economic blockade enforced by Israel and Egypt. Has caused complete devastation inside Gaza. Is it ever going to be lifted? Is there any kind of... Are we going to be talking about the same blockade in 5 years' time on the show?
Unfortunately, I don't see any day in the near future where we're going to see the lifting of the blockade. There is simply not anywhere near enough international pressure on Egypt or Israel to lift the blockades. The blockades are... it's illegal under international law because it's collective punishment of a civilian population. The only time we hear about the plight of Gaza is when rockets are fired from Gaza.
Yeah.
And that's intermittent. And in between then, the world completely forgets about Gaza. They think everything is fine and that, you know, these pesky, annoying Palestinians decide to disrupt the peace every once in a while.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the world has completely forgotten it. And unfortunately, what we've seen with the wider Palestinian issue and any other conflict that grinds on long enough is that people lose interest. It stops being new, so it falls off the news radar. And unfortunately, yeah, Gaza is a victim of that.
But the blockade happens every day. Wars might happen every 2 years, but the blockade happens every day. I mean, from a Gazan perspective, that is the number one issue, isn't it, Mahmoud?
The blockade at the moment. Of course, all of Gaza's entry and exit points are closed at the moment. People are struggling to have access to basic things in life, such as food, supplies, such as electricity. Because of the fact that all of Gaza's entry and exit points are closed, the electricity power station in Gaza that was bombed in 2006 is still not repaired. So people are surviving on 8 hours of electricity per day if they are lucky. Sometimes they get as much as 5 hours, sometimes they get as much as 6 hours. The blockade is also suffocating the Gaza Strip psychologically, economically. There is no hope for even a better future right now. There is about 75% unemployment in Gaza at the moment. People are dreaming of basically leaving Gaza Strip, which brings to mind a famous saying that Netanyahu at some point asserted that I will never ask Gazans to leave or the Palestinians to leave the land. Mm. I would basically make their lives so miserable that they would wish they could do themselves. Actually live by themselves.
You want to come back in, Sharif?
Yeah, I mean, see, this is the focus on the lifting of the blockade, while of course completely necessary. Unfortunately, a lot of people focus only on the blockade and assume that this would somehow be the end-all solution for Gaza. This is one step, an important step, but one step towards the realization of Palestinian rights. Let's say the blockade was lifted tomorrow. Palestinians in Gaza wouldn't be happy to see the rest of their people under occupation in the West Bank, enduring all sorts of injustices. And this is what Israel wants. Israel wants the world to think that the blockade in and of itself is
lift it, problem solved.
Yeah, as if Palestinians will forget that the rest of their people are facing, you know, occupation and daily injustices.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is what people need to focus on. When they're calling for the lifting of the blockade, they have to keep in mind that that should be part of a wider achievement of Palestinian rights and not the end in itself.
Okay, we're going to conclude this discussion in a few minutes' time, but we're going to move on for the time being. Recently in London, a conference was held to solidify ties between Latin American and pro-Palestinian activists. Unlike many Western governments, Latin American authorities have historically been sympathetic to the Palestinian cause. Here's more on that story.
Latin America, at a governmental and popular level, has always been a staunch supporter of Palestinian rights. This solidarity is due to the large Palestinian diaspora in Latin America, as well as its own experience of Western colonization, its clear vision of resistance to foreign occupation, and its values of self-determination and independence. This conference, organized by the Middle East Monitor Organization and attended by academics, politicians, and members of civil society, aimed to foster greater Latin American, European, Palestinian collaboration in civil society, politics, and media.
Palestine remains the only country today that is subjected to European colonialism. All the other countries, you know, that were part of that wave of decolonization in the 1960s and 70s have attained their independence, except Palestine. And this is why it is so important today that there is solidarity from Africa and from Latin America and from Asian countries. Those who were part of that body, that corpus of UN resolutions, which said that colonialism, you know, is a crime, which says that, you know, all people are entitled to independence and statehood and freedom. All these countries must now rally around to ensure that this last bastion of European colonialism comes to an end.
The Israeli attack on Gaza in 2014 brought on a wave of Palestinian solidarity across Latin American countries, with some going as far as to expel Israeli diplomats and recall their ambassadors from Tel Aviv. Most Latin American countries have also recognized Palestine as a state. But work still needs to be done, because even as Latin American-Israel diplomatic relations have become frosty, trade relations have actually become closer.
The solidarity is important in that two things. One, the people of Palestine know that they're not alone, and that raises their confidence in struggles for their own liberation. And secondly, the persons who are oppressing the Palestinian people, the persons who can affect their lives, understand that they will not be able to do it in secret. When these things are exposed, we find that there is much more response from the governments, much more response from the organizations. So that solidarity, in a sense, will help with the eventual liberation of the Palestinian people.
As international politics edges towards a more multipolar world, it's predicted that the pro-Israeli Western powers, who've traditionally dominated international diplomacy when it comes to the Palestine-Israel conflict, will see their influence decline. And it's hoped that major blocs like Latin America can help to achieve justice for the Palestinians.
Mahmoud, we'll kind of conclude this discussion in the next few minutes, but I just want to ask you a final kind of question on the blockade. There do seem to be a few perhaps glimmers of hope, and things that I've read in the media recently about Egypt. I mean, they took Hamas off the terrorist list, didn't they, recently? There's also rumours about Israel allowing Palestinians to build a seaport off the coast of Gaza. Are these just rumours? Is it just, or is there something substantial in there?
I think rumors would be the best way to describe them, because we've been hearing about, Hamas being put off the terrorist list here and there by the EU before even Egypt decided to put it in the terrorist list to begin with. But the demands of lifting the blockade on Gaza, of building a seaport, were actually the demands of the Palestinians during the last war. Those were the demands that the Palestinians put on the table when they were negotiating the last ceasefire. And basically the only way that the war ended was when Israel started destroying apartment buildings. Buildings containing as much as 100 apartments would be destroyed in a glimpse of a second. So at the end, the Palestinians did not get their demands of building a seaport or lifting the siege on Gaza. And the war ended on the same terms of ceasefire that were offered on the table so 2 weeks into the war. So even a major war for 55 days did not bring about a lifting of the siege or building a seaport for the Palestinians.
And Egypt have actually tightened the Rafah border now, haven't they?
Exactly. For the last 2 years, when I was leaving Gaza to come here, I was stuck for about a month. It took me about a month to leave Gaza Strip and join my studies at the LSE, my program at the LSE. Right now, it's been completely blocked since then for the last 2 years. It's open maybe 32% or 35% of the time.
Mahmoud, internally in Gaza itself, I mean, there is law and order, isn't there? I mean, the authorities are still in control. They don't. Generally, people don't blame the authorities for what's happening, or do they?
That's a difficult question to answer because, in a way, they do. A lot of people are frustrated with the fact that, for instance, the Palestinian reconciliation negotiations are not leading anywhere.
Yeah.
A lot of people will blame Hamas on that. A lot of people will blame Fatah. And a lot of people would just blame the situation in general, that their lives are becoming so intolerable and so miserable that everyone for them is, a collaborator when it comes to how miserable their situation is.
Are there any glimmers of hope whatsoever here, Sharif? Or?
I think the hope now has to rest with grassroots movement beyond the borders of Israel and Palestine. Israel has made it so difficult for the Palestinians to challenge Israel's authority that the answer has to lie at the moment, at least, in the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, the ICC, on other forms of pressure outside. The Palestinian cause has to and is adapting to those circumstances. So now the pressure should come from outside on Israel because of the intransigence that it is showing on the ground.
Okay, guys, thank you very much. We could talk more, but we're going to have to end it there. Thank you very much for coming in. That's all we've got time for today. Once more, thank you to all our guests, and don't forget to get busy on social media telling us what you think of the issues raised in this program. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next time for more discussion and analysis on Palestine. Bye-bye.